Welcome to the 3 Minute Therapy podcast. And on this episode, as usual, Dr. Michael Edelstein, clinical psychologist. I'm joined by my co-author of 3 Minute Therapy, Dr. David Ramsey Steele. And we have a special guest today, Pam Popper. And I've been familiar with Pam's work on the whole food plant-based diet for many years. Pam is the founder and president of Wellness Forum Health, founder of Make Americans Free Again, and author of COVID Operation, What Happened, Why It Happened, and What's Next. And I invited Pam on to discuss some statements that Pam made, not as the center of a podcast she had published, but just along with it. And those statements bared on our work when we help people who have emotional disturbance, anger, anxiety, depression, guilt, procrastination, and addictions. So we were just going to discuss some of those and go into a little detail about them. So Pam, one of the things I wrote down when I was listening to one of your podcasts was that you said people can hurt you emotionally. So is this something that you meant literally or something you stand by, or would you like to explain more in detail what you mean by that?
Yeah, well, I think people can hurt you emotionally if you allow them to. And I think it takes a long time for people to find out that they don't have to allow it and how to not allow it. And that goes to a lot of things, ranging from setting boundaries, which some of us are not taught very well to do when we're younger, and also to sometimes determining that some people don't really have a place in your life anymore, or a different place in your life. You know, you're entitled to protect yourself. But I think that if you're feeling hurt emotionally by another person, you have a lot of choices of what to do about it. And you can choose not to allow people to hurt you anymore or to reframe what's going on. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, my mother, I think, hurt me a lot emotionally until I realized the person hurting was her. And lashing out, you know, if you see a dog who's been hit by a car, you go out in the middle of the street to help it, it might bark at you and bite you, you know? And I think that's a little bit of what went on with my mother. So,
yeah, I see. And I agree with everything you said, but in REBT, Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy, founded by Albert Ellis, we have a more fundamental view of that, along with the things you said, changing the situation so you don't have contact with these people if possible. But our view is that our emotions come from our own thinking, not from others' words. To quote Epictetus, men are disturbed not by things, but by the view which they take of them. So if you're in a situation where you're unable or it's highly disadvantageous to avoid a person that that criticizes you nastily, let's say, you still have another choice, and that is changing your thinking, because if your emotions come from your thinking, then if you feel hurt or angry or anxious, it comes from your thinking, your views, your attitudes, your beliefs. And normally, if you have inappropriate, disturbed feelings, like one of those, then that's a result of what you're thinking. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you're far more skilled at this. I think in the videos that you might be referring to, I'm often sharing my own personal experience. I've never put myself out as a psychologist or mental health professional. All I can do is say that, you know, talk about what I've been through and how I've learned to be, I think, by most people's definition, a fairly centered person who's not bothered by very much anymore. It takes a long time to get there. So describing my process is entirely different than trying to represent myself as somebody who can solve somebody else's problems. I don't feel qualified to do that at all. I'm going to leave that in your hands.
Oh, okay, thanks. Any referrals would be greatly appreciated. David, did you have any other thoughts on that?
No, so far I'm just following along. It sounds all very cogent.
Okay. Another comment that I'm going to quote you on, Pam, is aspire to be a good person. So again, as a therapist, we have somewhat of a different view, and that is it's good to aspire to do well without rating your total self based on the rating of your behavior. So the point is try to change your behavior if you think you're not doing well and try to do better without giving yourself a total rating. Does that make sense, or do you have a slightly different view there?
Well, I think that everybody kind of figures this out for themselves. I do evaluate myself, and that may or may not be the right thing to do. But again, I do. I try to be very conscious of the way that I interact with other people and to evaluate outcomes. And I don't give myself A's and B's or whatever, but I look at what happens in response to my behavior. And if I think that my behavior causes problems for me and other people, and it isn't a matter of, I think when you express your opinion about something, you should be free to do it. But the way that you express your opinion about something or the way that you go about doing something is often the issue. When you notice that, you do something about it. And I think that more right now, I think what we're watching going on in the world is an enormous amount of behavior. I mean, people running around like their pants on fire, behaving in insane ways where they don't even take 37 seconds to figure out how they're dealing with other people. You know, if I alienated most of the people I know by my stance on this topic, in other words, you know, I'm hearing from people who they don't speak to their family members anymore. They've torched every relationship they have. I would at least take a moment to figure out my role in, you know, is this a difference of opinion that has caused this, or is this the way I behaved that may have had something to do with this? And a tremendous amount of lacking self-reflection right now seems to be rampant in the world. So again, I'm not the expert. All I can do is share my observations, and I'll refer to you. If somebody wants to figure this out for themselves, they need help from somebody like you, not from me.
Yes, I agree. And the reason I'm bringing these issues up is to help educate people who are watching the podcast, who come to us often because they have emotional problems that they'd like help with, because they know that we're exponents of rational emotive behavior therapy, which is a type of psychotherapy for emotional problems. But again, I agree with what you said, but what you said really reflects our view also, because what you said focus on people's behavior. You said, I careful what I do with people, I evaluate consequences, and how I deal with other people. So you're talking about acting well, and it seems to me that there's no point in thinking because I act well, I'm a good person. And one of the problems with it is if you're a good person because you're acting well, then if you don't act so well, and since we're all imperfect humans, we're not going to act so well all the time, then that implies the other side of the coin. I'm not only not a good person, but if I act poorly enough, I'm a bad person. And rating yourself as a good or bad person tends to lead to depression, because when people are depressed, often they're rating themselves as a bad person. I'm no good. I'm worthless. I'm a loser. I'm hopeless. And
I think right now you're rating me as a bad psychologist, which is why I don't hold myself out to be one.
Yeah, right. I'm just going to
share my personal experience and what I do. And if somebody says, listen, this idea of examining what happens in response to interactions that you have with other people and then having some kind of self-evaluation doesn't work for me, then you shouldn't do it, because I'm not in the business of telling people anything in this particular area other than what I actually have been through myself, my own process. And by the way, I've said numerous times in my podcast, I'm a data girl. What I'm really good at is explaining what the medical research says about things that become kind of irrefutable. In other words, if a study says that this particular intervention reduces the risk of something by 12%, 12% is 12% and it's 12%. Now you can rate that with other studies. And this kind of data analysis is stuff I'm really good at. And up until this COVID thing, I shared nothing about my personal life. You can go back and watch videos that date back to 2007 and 8. You'll never hear anything about my personal life. And the only reason that I started sharing anything about my personal life during this particular point in time is that for the first time, people started writing to me about their personal life. People used to write to me, it was 100% about data as it pertains to medical, informed medical decision-making. Should I have this test or not? Should I eat this diet or not? Should I take the supplement? Should I have the surgery? All data-related questions, all right? So I ventured into a new area of sharing personal experience. I've been pretty crystal clear that that's what it is. And I would think that from a psychological standpoint, you'd look at it that way. I mean, if I said that I disconnected from my family because I found them to have a negative influence on me, that's certainly not a suggestion that anybody should do the same thing. I'm not trying to model for anybody. I'm just trying to be as transparent about my own process for things. And so that's just the extent of it. And I promise I won't practice psychology. I don't prepare slide sets about it. I won't write articles about it. I don't practice it or anything like that. So I'm going to defer to you on all of it. I'm going to, if we were in court, I would just stipulate for the record, you're right. All right. Because I think you are. I think you know a whole lot more about this than I do.
Yeah. Pam, I hope you understand. I'm not criticizing you and I don't expect you to be a professional psychologist. I picked on these things because they tend to illustrate points we like to make for our audience. So this is really more for our audience who generally are here because they'd like to learn how to deal with their own emotional disturbance. But it's not a criticism of you.
The process might not be very good for them. First to admit, I understand exactly.
Yeah. David, did you have anything about...
Well, as one bad psychologist to another, I could perhaps try to rephrase what Michael was getting at. I think part of it, this is that with people who are prone to depression, it helps to encourage them to view their behavior as something external to themselves, to their inner essence, as it were. And then they can view it more dispassionately. And thus, if they can say, that was a bad piece of behavior, without thinking, I really screwed up, what a terrible person I am, which is the reflex of someone who's prone to depression. So making this distinction, which may seem a bit scholastic, can be very helpful to people prone to depression.
Yeah, I can see that.
Okay, good clarification, David. Thank you. And then on the last point, I think we'll have a similar kind of discussion. And that is, you said you're against unconditional love. Now, we're against unconditional love also, so we agree on that. But we have what we think is a better way to view it, and that is, which is unconditional, but it's unconditional self-acceptance. It means accepting yourself as the imperfect, fallible human you are, whether you do well, poorly, or not at all, you're still the same imperfect human. Perhaps that's what you meant by unconditional love, or... perhaps this is from your own experience, but did you have thoughts about that, Pam?
Well, I wasn't talking about unconditionally loving myself, okay? Because I think you're spot on that you can't look at everything that you do that doesn't turn out so well as a reflection upon who you are and the value you have as a human being. And I wish there was some magic wand that would make me never lose my temper, never get short with people. There's nothing like that, right? When I was talking about unconditional love, I think that where it became, again, just speaking from personal experience, where it became confusing to me is when I, reading books and that sort of thing, got the idea that somehow, you know, situations in which things, I mean, I think when you're a child, you're kind of vulnerable. I think some of the things that happened to me as a kid, particularly things that happened between my mother and I hold her responsible for a lot of it, and I don't really want to unconditionally love her. I had a tortured relationship with her,
right,
and
right.
And I think a lot of what she did was unforgivable. And I can learn from that experience. I've learned not to do what she did. And so often you see this become generational, right? Everybody says they're not going to be like their parents. And they end up being like that anyway. I was traveling down that path and then life intervened and thank God, right? But I think that the surefire way to feel terrible about yourself is when you feel that you can't unconditionally love people who've done terrible things. And I got over that on my own. Somebody else might say, listen, the only way I can survive is to unconditionally love people who did terrible things to me. I don't have a right or wrong answer to it. I can only say that I thought it was very liberating for me to be able to say to somebody else, my mother did a lot of terrible things. I had a tortured relationship with her. I didn't speak to her for a couple decades at one point in time. And I don't think we ever had a significant discussion about anything before she died. So how do I feel about her? Certainly not the way most mothers want their kids to feel about them, you know? And I don't feel that I didn't love her enough or that I was, there was something wrong with me for not being able to generate those feelings that mothers expect their daughters to have for them. I refused to feel bad about myself for not being able to care about them more, if that makes any sense.
Oh yeah, makes a lot of sense. And we teach people to refuse to feel bad about themselves while feeling bad about some of their behaviors in order to improve their behaviors and not to improve their total selves. So, and the reason I bring this up is not to correct you so much as to serve as an illustration for clients that when they put themselves down or get depressed, a good solution is don't criticize your behavior, but don't criticize your total self. Accept yourself unconditionally as the flawed, fallible, imperfect human you are, who is always going to make mistakes, act poorly, get disapproval at times, but through all that, you're the same imperfect human. So it sounds like you would be on board with that. You just express it a little differently. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, very good. Either of you have any final words?
Well, you know, I was raised by my wicked stepmother, who presented herself to me as my real mother, but later I found out the real situation. And I didn't really like her at all. Let's shut this down. So I fully understand that kind of thing. It strikes me that when people talk about unconditional love, there are conditions, what they're saying is at the time when they say they have unconditional love, they don't think that those conditions are going to apply. You know, in other words, they say I unconditionally love this person. What they're saying is I trust that person not to get to the point where the conditions apply. As well as liking them a lot, I'm pretty certain I'm never going to stop loving them. And I suppose that's harmless. That's a harmless attitude.
Yeah.
Okay, David, thanks for the clarification. And thank you again, Pam, for being on with us and subjecting yourself to our psychological...
I would like to ask you, Pam, if you're any relation to Sir Karl Popper, the philosopher.
I wish. Not that I know of, but some of my family were from Eastern Europe, where he was originally from. But
yes, he was from Vienna.
Yeah, I quote him all the time in terms of when I teach people how to look at science, when we're looking, again, back to my wheelhouse, which is objective, you know, information and facts. You know, he was the father of the assume it's wrong until try to prove it wrong. And if you can't, then you know it's right, instead of what people tend to do.
Well,
you hear a new fact and jump right in. Of course, that must be true. That's what gets people in trouble in the healthcare field, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, you try to prove it wrong. And if you can't, for the time being, you accept it, even though later you might prove it wrong.
Right. But at least we're all talking about doing it scientifically instead of the way that health information is so often discussed. He said, she said, and somebody else said, and I read a book and somebody else read a book. Everybody's doing this hearsay, these circular discussions that can never end. You can't ever arrive at a conclusion. And so, and health can't be there's always room for discussion, but when you're trying to make a decision about something that you have to do right now, there are right and wrong answers. Not necessarily that everybody would arrive at the same answer. I mean, two people can look at the same house and one person wants to live there and another one doesn't. It's the same house, right?
Right.
But you can at least, I mean, the objective parts of the house, there are trees on the lot, the square footage, the tax base, right? The value per square foot. Those are the objective things that you can look at and agree on. And then you can make a decision. Do you want to buy this house? Well, a lot of health is decided the same way. You know, should I have this surgery? Well, there's risk associated with doing it and not doing it. What's your perception of the risk if you understand it in objective terms? And I think Popper, the other Popper, not this one, had the right idea about how to approach questions like that.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks for
right.
for no extra
spoken
charge.
Like a true Popperian.
Thank you.
For no extra charge, our viewers got a dose of scientific thinking. And again, thank you very much, Pam, for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you, Pam.
And Chris Rossini, thank you for the technical side of it. If you enjoyed the podcast, give us a like. And if you would like to be a guest, Pam survived, it looks like, survived quite well. If you'd like to be a guest, let us know. If you have questions or disagreements, put it in the comments. And give us, take a look at Patreon to support us and read our book, 3-Minute Therapy, to stay on the rational side of life.